Coming up in today's podcast, there's magic in the air. But did it turn out to be a magical weekend for The Wire? Patton's visited the patent office again to register yet another move. Ratchford's out injured, so what does that mean for Warrington? And there's a horticultural feel to the show. This is What Would Brian Bevan Say?
So you might hear a squirrel halfway through this podcast.
It's not a squirrel, Dennis. You've been at the dope again.
It's not, honestly. It's big, whatever it is.
Hello, I'm Rob London, and quite frankly, I'm surprised I'm here, and I haven't taken over from Paxman after my hard-hitting Tom Lynham interview. Joining me on the podcast are my fellow two interviewees. Yes, firstly, his interview style has been likened to Trisha, for his empathetic nature, all smoothly caressed through his sensitive feminist side. Yes, it's Samuel Sankey. Hello, Sam.
Hello, good evening, Rob. How are you?
I'm very well. Now, you've been down to London again, I hear, this weekend. Did you take Mrs. Sankey up the Shard?
No, there was no Shard action this weekend. We had an excellent weekend, thank you. Thursday evening in Richmond, Friday at Chelsea in the Royal Garden, finishing on Harrods Champagne Terrace, and then Kingston-upon-Thames for Friday night and Saturday morning breakfast. Very similar to the Liverpool district of Anfield, that was. Very similar.
Very similar. Well, obviously, coming from south of the river, I expect a cultural weekend like that, Sam. We'll come on to the Chelsea Flower Show in a second. But also, I should also introduce our second interviewee. His reporting method described as a car crash. Think an interview cocktail technique of the Gestapo mixed with Russell Harty when he interviewed Grace Jones. A very good evening to Den Waywell. Hello, Dennis.
Right there. You fucked the Pactman bit up, didn't you? Trying to interview me.
I can edit that out. You had a good week, mate?
Not bad. Did the gardening this weekend because I was spurred on by Sam's, you know, going to the Chelsea Flower Show. So I did some gardening. Dug up most of the borders and everything. I was quite inspired. I had a look at some of the things that were found in gardens when you gardening and things. There was a woman in Somerset found ammonite, 65 million years old, about 18 inches. And I thought, I'll see what I can find. And then there were some Roman coins that were found in a village nearby as well. And of course, you got Glastonbury Abbey, many artifacts dug up there.
Did you find anything, Dennis?
Yeah, crisp packet, square crisps. Some fag ends, an Irish coin, a bone and a little urn, probably an urn, which was probably someone's ashes at some point. So, there was, I did actually have a look at some really quirky stuff that was found, buried. And there was a few things, a mangle, a bath, there's a love letter somebody found. Isn't that nice? Buried in the garden. I can imagine you doing something romantic like that, Rob. An old hard drive. That's quite sinister, isn't it? Having a hard drive. Just think what data's on there. I can imagine you having something like that, Rob. Probably like porn. Put all your porn on a hard drive and put it in the garden. Yeah. Something.
Why would you bury a hard drive? It's a dodgy one, isn't it? Mm-hmm.
And finally, a husband's dinner was probably the best one.
It's in the garden.
Yeah.
So not in the cat, in the garden. That's good.
Yeah.
It's very good. Well, Sam, you were down there at the Chelsea Flower Show. Did you see any sort of award-winning installations that caught your eye?
Well, I think it would be remiss of me not to say the real reason why I went down there was a lad from Warrington, a lad called Adam White, big Warrington fan, big Wire fan, actually co-created the Duchies of Cambridge Garden.
He did,
but
what with
other
it?
Than that, I went round and I saw something that I think might be of interest to our current coach.
Oh.
The Resilience Garden won a gold medal. Oh. And it was looking at how gardens can be made resilient to challenges such as climate change, pests and diseases. So pests, maybe a bit like Sam Tonkin's, diseases like being from Wigan.
Mm. Right, very nice. And was it designed by Steve Price? Did it have any sort of tag on it saying who designed the Resilience Garden?
He's obviously working under a pseudonym of Sarah Eberle.
Mm, okay. Well, I've got a list here of the Chelsea Flower Show winners. I've got Ooh. The best in show, and I've got a whole series of gold medal winners. So what I thought I'd do, I'd read them out, and you could perhaps, a little bit of a quiz here, come up with who you thought designed them based on the fact if it was a Warrington player. I've got the answers. I'll start with the first one.
Best Can I just show- clarify? I'm definitely, you're not asking me here, are you?
Best in show was the MG Garden. Inspired by nature's power to regenerate, this woodland landscape will be interspersed with stone platforms and a huge burnt timber sculpture representing natural rock formations. Now, for this one, I've gone for regenerate Curry with his knee, and obviously rock, burnt timber. I've gone for Massilla. So I've called that one the Curry and Massilla Meadow.
Oh, very nice. Yes, yes. Very nice. I did suspect a bit of foul play with Best in Show, because the M&G were actually sponsoring the whole show, so they've actually awarded the prize to themselves.
The Morgan Stanley, inspired by the UK's love of beautiful gardens, and explores how to continue the tradition of creating an hibiscus-rich space. Word beautiful was mentioned. Tom Lyne came on the podcast last week. He said the best-looking player at the Wolves was Toby King. So I've called that one the Toby King Bouquet.
Very nice, yes.
Now you'll get this one, Dennis. Come on, are you listening? Welcome to Yorkshire. The Welcome to Yorkshire Garden is inspired by the country's proud history of industry, manufacturing and innovation, as well as its stunning natural environment. Who do you think I've put on that one? Tom Lynham, Dennis. Tom Lynham, the Tom Lynham land.
Yeah. I thought you said Tom Lynham.
Here's another one for you. The Campo no Niwar, a system of Japanese herbal medicine. This is a garden that celebrates the route to health and happiness through plants.
Big Ben.
I actually went Kevin Brown Vegan Vista for that one. And there was two installations that disappointingly weren't open to the public. The first one just had a sign on it that read, "Unfortunately, at the time of the show, this installation is still under construction, requiring at least another 10 weeks prior to its completion." And that was the deck pattern Stutter Paddock. And the last one was rejected by the judges. An overturned wasteland consisting of horse manure, rotting vegetables, dog shit flung over the fence from the local park, all embraced by a septic, piss-filled pond full of dead ducks, a beheaded swan, used condoms, and old bike tyres. And that's the Kevin Sinfield Nothing Sticks allotment.
Very nice.
Sid Phillips, the only surviving member of the last Warrington team to be crowned champions, has died, age 87. Sid played second row for the Wire when they beat Oldham in the championship final at Main Road on May 14, 1955. Sid played in 17 of Warrington's games during the 1955 championship season, which included scoring two tries in the playoff semi-final win against Halifax. Sid also went on loan to St Helens, and played 161 matches for Keighley, becoming one of Keighley's favourite all-time players. He was a postman in the Yorkshire town long after his playing days ended. Sid Phillips played 95 matches for the Wire and made his debut for the Primrose and Blue in 1952, playing his final game for Warrington in 1956. During his time at Wilderspool, he played alongside the likes of Wire legends Jim Challenor, Harry Bath, Jerry Helm and Brian Bevan. Sid was a brilliant second row forward, but was just at home in Warrington's backline. He will always be remembered as a Wire champion.
We've just finished the game, the Wigan game. The Warrington team was Mamo, Lynham, Goodwin, King, Charlie, Austin, Patton, Hill, Clark, Cooper, Hughes, Curry, Philbin at 13. Interchange bench was Murdoch, Massilla, Jason Clark, Akawala, and the young Danny Walker came in. Final score was Warrington 26, Wigan 14. We'll take a look at the first half first. That opening 10 minutes again, Sam, more of the same, wasn't it? That classic Wigan-Warrington back and two thing.
Yes, it was. I was surprised. It was just how similar it was to the Challenge Cup game from a couple of weeks ago, where Wigan were maybe just just slightly on top, but they came with a clear idea, basic football, kick the ball down long and hope we made mistakes coming out of our quarter. The one thing they have got is effort in defence. I'll give them that, but that's about all they've got.
Yeah, Dennis, did you see it a bit like that as well?
Well, I wrote down tight as a duck's arse 18 minutes. There was just nothing in it. The overall half itself was relatively dull in some respects, as everybody just sort of like neutralised each other's sort of sets of six and so on, really, wasn't it? It wasn't really much to talk about, I suppose.
Were you surprised, Sam, that early on when Wigan got that penalty that they kicked at goal? Seemed to have Warrington on the back foot. I mean, they did that in the Challenge Cup game as well.
I feel when I watch our team play Wigan over the last two or three years, they've beat us in the two key games, obviously the two grand finals. And the way they've beat us is by keeping things so tight and letting us get frustrated, where we try and play too much football at times. We're not patient enough and we drop the ball and they capitalise. So I felt their game plan was to just get ahead, 2-0, maybe 4-0, maybe score a try and just keep us below 10. That seemed their game. They're very physical in defence. It's a perfect description for them. They're physical. They're not an attractive team to watch.
No, they're not at all. Okay, it's a certainly different style.
Did you think about, was this the point where Philbin was running and took Greenwood in the chest? Do you reckon he was told to run hard at that point? You couldn't run any harder, could you?
Yeah, last month or so, I don't think he's run as hard. I thought that was back to where he was sort of doing that kamikaze attitude at the start of the season. Beautiful, beautiful run, wasn't it? And that was one of the reasons possibly Wigan struggled a bit tonight. They did pick up a couple of injuries. There was the ISA incident in the second half, which we'll come on to. But then Warrington did get in the lead. Beautiful move out to the left. We had Tom Lynham on the pod. He talked about being right-footed. And there it was, from the inside of his right boot, back inside for the wonderful, wonderful, wonderful Declan Patton. Great try, Dennis. You've said he needed 20 games. Was this it?
This is it. Well, if you think about it, he's actually serving just beyond 15 games. So maybe he doesn't need 20 games. He's had his statutory 15 games. And
He's come premature, has he?
Yeah, I think so. Sam, what do you think?
Other people have knocked him, not us, but other people have knocked him.
That's right.
No.
I did think, actually, a little earlier in the half, both Patton and Curry were screaming for the ball for Darryl Clark, and he kept turning back inside when we had overlap. So I felt Patton and Curry themselves obviously felt there was something to exploit down the Wigan right. And it was a fifth tackle. Patton chose to run it, passed outside. Lynham, as you said, then had a little bit of space, a little bit of luck, of course, with the dribble through. But they had a go when it came off, so good on him. I was pleased that something's gone right for him.
Yeah, well, he kicked well tonight. We'll come on to that towards the end. Also then, just before half-time, we nearly got further ahead. Ben Murdoch-Masilla, beautiful step off his right foot through the gap, pushes one off, and then Hardacre comes in and dislodges that ball. We've had a tweet that's come in from Alfie Garner. He said, the Ben Murdoch-Masilla charge, he believes that Hardacre knocked the ball out of his hands. Why was that not a knock-on by Hardacre? And seeing as though a Paeta scooped it up in an offside position. Penalty to wire? Sam, your thoughts on that one?
Possibly a knock-on, but not a penalty. The reason for that is I would suggest that to be offside, you're deliberately picking the ball up in an offside position, and there's no way the Wigan player or the referee for that matter, would have seen exactly what Hardacre did. That's probably why it wasn't given a knock-on. But I couldn't have given a penalty for that, but possibly a knock-on. If they'd have gone to the screen, yes, it would have been given as a knocked out, wouldn't it, or stripped.
The thing with Ben Murdoch-Masilla, it's always like a sentence, isn't it? You're waiting for that full stop. Until the full stop comes at the end, you're not quite sure what's going to be in his sentence. And yet again he drops it. Dennis, your thoughts on it?
He could have held it in his left hand. That's my thought.
Oh, Jesus. I thought he could have dived for the line a little bit earlier.
Well, if he would have just actually started falling horizontally, he probably, you know, a bit sooner, he probably would have still made the line anyway with his momentum.
Can you fall vertically?
Fall from a vertical position. Come on, keep up.
Let's be fair that he's done that before, though, Hardacre, hasn't he? I remember this time last year, Rob, you going mad on WhatsApp when he actually stopped Ben Curry from scoring. So maybe we should give some credit to the defender, even though it's Zach Hardacre and we don't like him.
Well, I'll go back to an old great player for Warrington, and he went to come on to be a coach, and that was Alex Murphy. Alex Murphy taught all his players to dive well before the line. And
I think I've seen a few of these players do this in recent weeks. Have you noticed? I don't know if they've not stopped watering the pitches or whatever, but they're almost like just bouncing to an instant standstill when they go diving for the line. So, yeah, I agree with you in some respects, but that could backfire. Didn't one of the players drop it last week for someone? Just short of the line. You bounce before the line and drop the ball.
I think when you quickly learn how far you can dive from and you get down to ground as quickly as possible.
How far would you dive?
I'd dive to the line, based on my current back issues, I'd probably dive after I was over the line.
What about with the extra weight that you're carrying? Do you not think you'd be able to get a bit of momentum back further out?
Well, it depends if I've got my commode with me, really.
Okay.
Right, let's move on to the second half. Again, a little bit nip and tuck. And then it was the magic, wasn't it? That's what changed it all. That was the Blake Austin try. Pretty much off a flat start. Tom Lynham talked about who was the quickest in the team from 40 metres out. Well, Blake Austin showed a whole heap of pace. I think Hardacre was in two minds, thinking that Austin was going to step off that left foot and go back inside him, and gave him too much room on the right-hand side to go around him. And we were in. Terrific try, wasn't it, Sam?
It was a wonderful try. It brought the game to life, because that first 10 minutes in the second half, I was a bit worried we were going to press the self-destruct button. We were turning over possession. They were on our line. But then almost out of nowhere, it's almost as if he just saw half a gap and bang, he was through, wasn't he? There was no waiting around, no hesitancy, just bang, the gap was there.
I saw that gap on TV. I think we all sat there and saw that gap and thought, well, it's probably going to be closed by the time he gets there. And then he was halfway through it, and then he just kept going. So
story of my life, that I'm always seeing gaps and they're always closed when I get there. We probably should talk a little bit about the aura of Blake Austin, because Jonathan Davis mentioned this a few weeks ago, that they crowded Blake Austin, and from that we managed to score elsewhere on the park. I thought, again, Hardacre, had it been anyone else, he would have been able to tackle the player coming through, but he was so worried about that big left step happening, he just gave him too much room on the outside and off he went.
Is that Welsh, that aura? Did you say a Welsh word?
Boy, we've been here before, Dennis. Come on. You're better than that.
No, I love your Jonathan Davis impression. It's great. Super.
Again, Wigan were niggly all the way through that second half.
They were.
Kendall Mintcake, who was tonight's referee, thought he was more of a smooth, sugary Mintcake in the first half.
He's annoying. Half.
Did you not go to the Lake District?
1 minute. Go to the Lake District. I've got this written down. Sorry.
Dennis is on one.
1 minute 33. He spent about 10 or 15 seconds shouting at Clark or someone and saying, oh, you're offside. The play's going on. He's looking round at Clark going, oh, you're offside. Make sure you get back the 10 minutes. Oh, is there something going on over there? He's absolutely pathetic, that bloke. He needs to shut his mouth and just blow his whistle. That's
it. Sam, is that Dennis Waywell's first rant?
I think it might. For a moment, I thought Gary Schofield was on the podcast.
Yeah, it really wound me up, that did.
Well, if you go to the Lake District and you get the Kendall Mint Cake now, you do get that smooth, sugary mint cake. I did think in the second half, they've come out with all these new mint cakes now. They're sort of ginger, dark chocolate, and it's a bit bitter. I thought Kendall Minkcake's game went off in that second half, bitter and twisted a little bit with some of the penalties. We'll move on to the other incident. Ben Curry put on report for the ISA tackle. There was nothing wrong with that, was there? It was just a wrestle to the ground and he got his head in the wrong place.
I think it was McDermott, mentioned it on Sky, that you never used to see all these players hurt, did you? I fully appreciate we are more aware of head injuries now and looking after players. But it seems like someone goes down injured with a head injury every 5 minutes. I thought he was playing for a penalty, personally. Well,
they've had a huge increase in neck injuries in rugby union. If you go back 30 years ago, most men weren't going to the gym that played rugby union on an amateur basis. And now your amateur rugby union player goes to the gym and they're all 3 stone heavier than they were. And there's so much pressure put on the neck in scrummaging in union that they're having this huge amount of neck injuries. I think it's possibly the same now. You look back to sort of the early 1900s when we had the Warrington pack that was infamous for being the biggest pack in the competition. And the average weight of a prop was 11.5 stone.
Yeah, but let's just think about it, though, is that, you know, when you, in the old days, you were basically just there to tackle and that was it. But the game's changed significantly now that it's tackle and control it and twist them around,
et cetera. He was suggesting it was the wrestling tactics of a tackle that was putting people more in harm's way.
Dennis, can I just point out that you just said there that the point of rugby league in the olden days was just to tackle. Do you know what this podcast is called and who it's named after?
Yes.
He was renowned for his tackling, was he, Dennis?
Hey. Right, yeah.
And on that bombshell, we'll move on.
What do you mean? What do you mean he was renowned for his tackling? No, what I'm saying is that you know what I'm saying. So what's your point?
Listen, Dennis, I'm moving into Paxman's chair soon. I'm cutting edge now.
I'm
keeping
drag
you on the edge
you
of your seat.
I'm dragging you down.
It's like we've got him on for balance, Sam, isn't it? That's the only reason. It's like the lunatic that's come on that says 2 and 2 is 5.
Now, you've turned. This is Kendall Mintcake's fault. Anyway, I wouldn't be so wound up. Carry on.
All right. Okay. Well, then there was the Toby King try. He galloped away. I'm not sure he sprinted away. He galloped away over that sort of 70 metres to score and put the game to bed.
Does he always have to stick his tongue out when he's like about to go over that? Have you noticed? Every time he scores, he sticks his tongue out. Is this just me seeing this? Am I watching it on a different bandwidth?
You're on one.
Sam, what did you make of that?
I think we got a bit lucky twice, didn't we? We got a bit lucky with it. But again, we were the team trying to play the rugby. We got the bounce of the ball. Kevin Brown mentioned it. It is a bit of luck, but we had 3 or 4 men flooding up in support of him. Charnley could have got away and scored it. He didn't. He passed off to King. King could have passed on to Mamo. Darrell Clark gave up halfway, thinking there was plenty of people there. Yeah, we were flooding forward, and it was just, it was a lovely moment, wasn't it, to know that the game was won, and we'd have a nice 15 minutes to watch.
Yeah, could just imagine on how that point, Wigan has left at that point.
After that try, I think was probably the most important sort of about 8 minutes after that, is that he immediately gave penalty to Wigan, and they had two dropouts under the sticks of Warrington. Yeah, yeah. And in that period of time, the defence was good enough and we saw off that challenge at that point, which, you know, if they would have scored at that point, it would have been sort of game on, I think, for the last 15 minutes.
Yeah, well, Kendall Minkcake, he came up with a big call there, didn't he? Because right at the start of that 8 minutes, Wigan moved the ball across field right on their own try line on the fifth tackle.
Yes.
Yeah. And he gave a penalty for Murdoch Masilla coming in late on O'Loughlin. They only showed it on Sky in slow motion afterwards, but I think he was committed to that tackle. And it was only round the waist.
I think he probably gave it because he'd given one against Wigan in the first half when one of our lads got clattered. Can't remember who got... properly hit off the ball. Got
mint properly cake balance.
Hit, and I think he was just balancing it up.
Mint cake balance, that would be. It's one of those bars you can get with half chocolate, half natural mint cake, probably. Mm. The yin and yang of mint cake. Okay. Anything else to add? Anyone see any points today that looks like we're going back in the right direction? Or did we just come up against a bum Wigan team that's missing a few stars?
I think a bit of both. I was really pleased because I think we made hard work of it today. It was a tough game, but we got frustrated in a couple of moments and tried to force the issue instead of being patient.
But Sam, isn't that just Warrington? I mean, surely yeah. We should have some kind of Latin inscription under our logo that says we like to make hard work of it. Wouldn't that be perfect?
That's
for
a good
us?
Good idea. But can you do that research for next week, Sam, and come up with what that actually is? Because you're south
well,
of the river.
I'll come so up with a logo, yes.
It'll be almost on the tip of your tongue anyway.
Both Austin and Price mentioned it after the match about not starting the second half right. We tried to play football from get-go in the second half instead of taking 10 minutes just to reassert our dominance.
We're halfway through the season now. Rob, I want to sort of like sum it up really, because we were talking the other day. My feeling is that, yeah, we've had a pretty sort of easy go of it. What's your take on whether we're actually, you know, sort of performing at the top of our game? We could probably beat St. Helens as we get further on in the season and stuff. Or are we actually sort of just a mediocre side that's had a pretty good run? What's your take?
I take it that we've got a lot of money behind our backing of Simon Moran, and consequently we've got a head start on everyone else. But St. Helens are the best team in the competition. And on today's performance, we wouldn't beat St. Helens in a final. I still think we're sitting comfortably in second. We've got a whole heap of teams below us that are sort of higgledy-piggledy this year and are not quite going to get there. Catalan may get there. I think they probably also have the game maybe to take St. Helens on because they've got the big forwards. It'll come down to a few games again this season, won't it? We know where we're going to finish. We're second or third. And as Sam clearly pointed out last week in the way the playoffs were, Rin got a great opportunity to make the final. But I still think we're a number six or number seven, whatever you want to call Patton short of being a class team.
Well, hopefully we can fill that gap.
Well, right. let's be fair to him. 7 out of 7 tonight. So
he did very well
tonight on that side.
Yeah. Now, Sam, I was going to do the predictions, but you've kind of gone on a bit too long. So we'll move away from the predictions.
No. Come back to predictions.
Here we go.
I don't mind moving on. I really don't mind.
Right. Well, Dennis, he wanted to book the trend on his predictions. He went for a 30-10 win to Wigan. As I'm saying, he's on the show for balance. I went 38-10. Sam, he nearly nailed it. He went 28-16. He was only 4 away from getting it. So well done, Sam. You're going to get half a point this week. That's very good. The one thing I did like tonight was our left-hand side. We've talked about the Tantra left. Dennis, do you want to sum it up, mate?
Dennis? Ah, you're speaking to me like Sean Connery tonight. I thought Patton probably he still made his odd couple of errors, but in general, as we want somebody as a supporting sort of player for Austin, although Kevin Brown was the pundit on Sky, so I don't know whether that sort of like, you know, was a bit of a, hey, oh, I'm nearly there, nearly back. But certainly his other parts of his game with his kicking and his, you know, his involvement was good. But his tackling was probably still, well, it was described as a little bit better. But certainly, I think if he concentrates more on the Tantra side of his tackling, he'll see the benefit in a few weeks.
Mm. Possibly time to go to the patent office with his Tantra tackle.
Indeed.
The person you are calling has not answered.
Dear Mr. Patton, reference 34987163, tackle technique, the Tantra tackle. Thank you very much for your recent application to the Patents Office for registering the Tantra Tackle. After careful consideration, the Patents Selection Committee recommends the application move to the next stage, whereby a patent specification must be submitted. The conditions of patenting the Tantra Tackle specification must consider the following conditions. 1. The Tantra Tackle must have been deployed on more than one occasion. 2. the left edge defense, must be robust enough to perform a one-on-one tackle, not a half-arsed attempt. 3. The Tundra tackle must be made with a dominant left hand, to lock up the ball-carrying arm of the offense. Note, it is not a limp-wristed handshake. 4. A confident Tundra defense is not represented by pointing in a vague direction, expecting a teammate to pick up your slack arse. 5. It should be reliable enough that Ben Curry can continue to save his energy, to hopefully make a line break later in the year. 6. The Tundra tackle must be repeatable beyond 20 games, God help us. 7. If the Tundra tackle becomes a rugby league success, it will be branded as the Austin or Widdop tackle. In addition to these considerations, the Tundra tackle cannot be used as an excuse for tackling with the resistance of a speed bump, or clutching at thin air trying to catch flies. The Tundra tackle will be available to all the Warrington Wolves players with the exception of Kevin Brown, who will continue to use the bent back, grab, head in the wrong position tackle, the headbanger. We look forward to the submission of your detailed specification for the Tundra tackle and any other innovations that are recommended by Dennis Waywell's Tackle Bags. Yours sincerely, Genitalia.
Okay, let's move on to other results that happened today. There was just the two games. Wakefield went down to Catalans 25-18. But the bizarre one was Huddersfield beat Hull 55-2. I was fast asleep when this was on. I presume the Hull coach broke down and didn't play and had to play guys from the crowd. What happened?
They basically played exactly the same as when we played them and beat them by about 40, 50 points. It just felt like a completely repeat of that, but a different colours. That was all. What do you reckon, Sam?
That Hull team ought to be ashamed of themselves. They are obviously only want to be motivated when they want to be. And
they only want to sort of ratcheted up when they need to.
Yeah, Radford it up. They were fully motivated and committed against us last week, obviously wanting to put right what they perceived as an injustice of us beating them by however many points and the perception that they were soft. And then they come out this week when they should be backing it up, and they can't be arsed, and it was like they couldn't tackle a paper bag.
Somebody commented.
Hull need to be ashamed of themselves.
Somebody commented that Huddersfield didn't have a good PR campaign like Warrington Wolves, so they didn't have anything to get motivated for.
Jesus. Oh, dear. The other result, Catalan fair winners against Wakefield.
I was avoiding the M6 closure. I didn't get home for that, I'm afraid.
I watched that one. I wrote loads of notes down. Well, I didn't. I wrote one line down, and which was actually a Wakefield. And there's a good, really good try in that match. It was like it's the Wakefield switch play try, I just thought that was really good. It was like they kept describing it as a training ground sort of try, but it was really good. 18-18 with about a few minutes to go. And then Catalan sealed it off sort of thing. But, yeah, it was a good match, actually.
Sounds like a magic try for a magic weekend.
Yeah, we had that in our
well, we're so much magic in the air. Oh, if only Steve Price could turn back the clock to a good old Saturday night in front of the telly watching this chap.
On BBC One Now, we feature the winning entry, which carried off the Golden Rose Award at the recent Montreux Festival, the Paul Daniels Magic Show.
Thank you. What a show we have for you this evening. Now, young assistant Debbie McGee isn't too well, so standing in is the lovely Tanya Arnold. Now, Tanya, tonight I will attempt what most people would say is impossible. Drumroll, Tanya. This evening, I will magically... No, Not pull a rabbit out of a hat. No, not saw Tanya in half. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, on tonight's show, I will endeavour to provide the Warrington Wolves halfback, Declan Patton, with a running game. Quiet, please, ladies and gentlemen. Now, Declan, please stand up. What? Oh, sorry, you are standing up. Christ, this could be harder than the card trick with the chimps. Tanya will now place the primrose and blue curtain around young Declan. You'll like this. Not a lot. Pull back the curtain, Tanya. And as if by magic, everyone, it's Kevin Brown!
Join us next week when Paul will create a miracle by conjuring up a passing game for Ryan Atkins.
Where's fucking Dynamo?
Okay, now, has Madam Boyd's chip shop reached full capacity? Or does her business model know no bounds? And will Kevin Sinfield and Richard Agar be joining her, possibly becoming delivery drivers for her ever-growing empire as she takes on the likes of the millionaire tycoon Richard Branson? But of course, unlike Branson, who refers to the word virgin in a metaphorical sense, with our spiritual recluse, virgin, one expect, means literal. It's over to Madam Boyd.
Good evening, Dennis. Can I speak to Madam Boyd, please? Yes, Dennis. A pathetic attempt to disguise your voice.
Oh, was that a Ouija board reading or something that told you it was me?
No, Dennis. It was your direct message on Twitter that suggested this time.
Right then. This week's predictions then, Madam Boyd.
Tony, would you do the honours, darling? You do remember how to do this, don't you, Tony?
It just comes through minimum effort.
Oh, that's right, dear. Oh, my goodness, you have learnt a few things while you've been away, Tony.
Yeah, and some new ideas.
Yes, Tony, we'll discuss those ideas later.
Sorry, if I may interrupt, Madam Boyd. I realise Tony's back. What's he got? What's his ideas?
He wants to introduce pies in the chip shop, Dennis, since his trip to Wigan. I'm not entirely sure it's suitable for Glastonbury.
Oh, right. So is he...
Now, Dennis. Oh, Tony, your hands, your left hand in particular, it's very tantra-like. Yes, Tony, rub it there. My balls are responding very well. I see a wobble. Ooh, disappointment. I see changes in momentum and places.
What do you mean, like the lead position?
Indeed, Dennis. Look at the ladder at the end of July.
Oh, so,
Tony, let's go and have a look at these pies, dear. Sorry? Queen pie? Ooh, you are awful, Tony. But I like
you. If you wish to leave a record of your call, please state your message at the sound of the tone.
So, Dennis, the wheels are falling off. What did you make of it?
I think she's sort of looking at the halfway stage of the season, the second half of the season. And, you know, this is where the table shakedown comes in. And almost suggesting that we might be part of that, which, you know, that's a bit of a concern for us going forward. Might have coincided with Ratchford.
Table shakedown. Well, that's an interesting phrase.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the thing about it is we've lost Ratchford this week. And the question is are we actually going to miss him? You know, and would that be contributing to the second of our season? What do you think?
I think we'll miss him a little for him coming into the line in terms of...
What with his nose? because when he comes into the line, he knows.
In terms of his passing ability, but I thought both Lining and Mamo today, considering they've been out for 2 or 3 weeks, well, Mamo longer than 2 or 3 weeks, made very, very good returns. And Mamo's extra pace might give it a little extra dimension there.
Can I be controversial here?
Go on.
Can I say that I believe Mamo is a better fullback than Ratchford?
Different type.
Yeah, he's a better type.
Well, if you look at the positive and negatives, kicking. Are we going to miss kicking now we've got wonderful pattern? I've written down his hypnotical step. Because when you watch Ratchford and he does a step, isn't it a bit like the Matrix? Doesn't everything slow down and he sort of does it in slow motion and then starts off again running? And he's never really sort of going that fast.
Oh, Matrix.
And as a fullback under the high bomb, I'd say it's as a positive, he's pretty good at that. And then negatives, I've got basically Rob's headless chicken and Sam's poster. I don't know why you've got a poster on the wall of him, Sam.
That's a good point.
I'm taking it down now. Have you put Tom Lynham up?
You've not put your memo up. Right, fair enough. Okay, right. Let's move on to the poll this week. It was a good one this week. The poll was, which 25% would you like to see? Now we'll come on to what the options were. There was a 25% reduction in ticket prices, a 25% improvement in pattern, a 25% in Steve Price not saying the word resilient, or 25% in speeding up the referee. It was the biggest landslide we've had so far. 6% to Price for resilience, 17% for speeding up the ref, reduction in ticket prices, 21%, but 56% of what would Brian Bevan voters went for? We want to see an improvement in pattern. Look, it wasn't 25% tonight, Sam, but you've got a point on this.
I was about to say almost exactly that. Not quite 25%, but there was an improvement tonight. Maybe he looked at the poll and said, I'll take that on board.
I'd like to ask how you're working out these percentages. Why is it not 25%? What are you working that on?
What do you mean, Dennis? You've got me there. Let me get my abacus out and my calculator.
Yeah, exactly. Why is it not 25%?
Because he threw one ball into touch. If he hadn't thrown that pass into touch, it'd have been a solid 25% improvement today.
I would say tonight it was a good solid 20%. Actually, I'd say more than that. Actually, I reckon he was probably a third better. So I'll go 33%.333 recurring.
Yeah, interesting.
Yeah, there you go. I like that. Yeah.
Hey, whatever way we look at it, tonight he got involved. He made a couple of mistakes, but he got involved. He contributed. More of the same, please. We'll be all happy.
Madam Boyd commented last week, she nailed it on the head. She came up with her prediction that Riley Dean and Connor Wrench would both be moved up into the first team. Well, lo and behold, what would you expect? They both signed extension contracts this week. We had a letter from Simon Bate, who wrote, he's watched a lot of reserves lately and he thinks Riley Dean is one of a hell of a player. Takes on the line, not afraid to put a shot in when needed, and he's a good organiser. So Sam, you need to get down to Vicky Park and tell us about these two young lads we've signed.
Okay, I'll do that.
A little bit of disappointment for Emma Simpson. She tweeted to say, excellent interview, as always, with Tom Lynham. A skinhead on Tom's return would just be wonderful. Didn't happen, did it, unfortunately? Seems to have a bit of hair there today.
I think he came back a week earlier than he expected, didn't he?
Yeah, but I think everybody missed it on the last episode, didn't they? Because we played out with Magic Man on the Tom Lynham episode. And I used a very squeaky pig-like voice as I was saying goodbye. All clues.
Oh, I thought that was
following...
Debbie McGee.
No. That was all... They were all clues to that Lynham was coming back that the listeners should be picking up for, because, you know, we can't give everything away, but little trail.
A bit like Krypton Factor, this show, isn't it? There's the physicalities of the game, and then, you know, you come from that side, Dennis, and come in with your utter bullshit.
I've got something else anyway for you there. Did you know the Anfield pitch is no bigger than any other pitch? Yet
correct.
The commentators go, oh, the pitch is bigger. Oh, they've got a chance to throw it out wide. It's exactly the same.
No, actually, Dennis,
actually, it's smaller.
Most football pitches are smaller because most football pitches are 105 metres long.
Yeah.
So when you've got 2 6-metre in goals, then they're actually shorter than a standard rugby league pitch.
It's 110 metres long. Anfield, and it's the width.
I think
110. But it's the width we're talking about. You throw the ball out to the sides, not down the length, and that's what they were on about. Mm. But here's the interesting fact.
I've heard it's all about width.
Yeah. Oh, well, yeah. Keep going down that way. Did you know that the Anfield pitch is made by Grassmaster? That is natural grass, and then it's impregnated with 20 million polypropylene fibres.
Yeah, that's the synthetic. This is what we were talking about the other week about Brookvale Oval, Dennis. Keep up.
No. But you, when you were saying synthetic, you were talking about synthetic seed as though it was like GM modified. That's what I took
no,
it
he out. Wasn't.
No,
he
wasn't at all. You jumped in the other week on that one, didn't you?
Well, I had internet things. Yeah.
Dennis, oh, right. Go and do your homework again. And
now, the worry
right,
is, Sam.
Come back.
The worry is, Sam, we've still not done Dennis's tackle bags. I mean,
exactly.
Gee.
God.
Anyway, okay, I've got something that'll cheer Dennis up. No, I've had one of my very rare direct messages from Dr. Phil in California. And when Austin scored his try tonight, he wanted to know whether that was an Austin Healey Sprite that was unveiled in Monte Carlo, which is very apt for the Formula One being there this weekend.
Write that down, Dennis. There's your soundbite for
right,
next week.
Nick. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Thank you.
It's probably time to see whether Dennis has come down from the roof after Tom Lynham agreed with Dennis that a few more left-handed players in the team would add balance to the wire lineup. Let's not forget Dennis's tackle bag section. He's not only promoting Timothy Taylor beer, as he now seems open to sponsorships from breakfast cereals too. Is there no end to his marketing sluttiness, which is showing more signs of promiscuity than a members' evening at Secrets Nightclub? It's over to Dennis's tackle bags.
Tackle bags.
Thank you so much for that. Thank you to all my sponsors, Weetabix, Timothy Taylor's, and I'm very grateful for any packages that come through in the next week. Anyway, last week on Tackle Bags, we talked about Breakfast of Champions and my Weetabix solution to supersize a breakfast for rugby players to increase performance. By the way, I was asked directly on Twitter what sort of milk I use to manage to eat 8 Weetabix a day. Well, it's warm milk. You can't do it any other way. And
full
it's
fat,
the quickest way.
Semi-skimmed or skimmed?
Well, actually, I'm on cashew nut milk at the moment, living
what?
Down south. Yeah, even though the house used to be a dairy, I'm actually on cashew nut milk. But a bit like the England wicketkeeper, Jack Russell, he didn't trust the offerings at lunch when he was playing cricket, and he insisted on 2 Weetabix soaked in milk for 8 minutes. So, and he used to know that if somebody hadn't done it a minute either way, that it was prepared wrongly.
Yeah, he had a lot of idiosyncrasies, did Jack Russell, and some people thought he was a bit Looney Tunes, frankly, if you can say that these days.
I know. I looked up another one, and he had he used to use 1 tea bag for 20 cups of teas.
Mm.
So I can imagine what that last one was like. Probably.
He wore the same hat for about 14 years as well.
Yeah. Mm. Right. Anyway, I got a response. 52% people said yes. Gina T in particular. If it keeps the performance as regular as the Weetabix and the resulting toilet visits, then it's a winner. So, trying to suggest that fibre there is high in the Weetabix consumption. 47% said no. Pappy said, "What if they're wheat intolerant? What if they're dairy intolerant? What if they're gluten intolerant?" I mean,
what they're going to eat then?
Exactly. There's too many of these sort of people about. Robert probably put avocado on it. He's disappeared, though.
Sorry, I'm back now. Have I missed anything, Sam? I went and got myself a coffee.
Oh, you missed the Jack Russell
bit. We've been talking about Jack Russell's wicketkeeping.
You would have enjoyed that. You could have got your uncle in and everything, but you missed it. You wandered off, so that's your fault. Anyway, 1%, Nelson's elbow. You say, go shit a brick, Dennis. So that's enough of that. Right, anyway, so... from that, I think I will be making some applications for the Weetabrick again and follow up on that after my original letter. Right, this week.
Oh, you're kidding. I went and made a coffee. I thought I'd missed the entire section. And I've come back and he's just started on this week.
Yes. Yep. I was dragging it out. Here we go. This week, Techno Balls. Nothing Madam Boyd related.
I think it should be called Techno Bollocks the way this is going.
I think we've got some Techno Balls going on near me. I can hear the concert coming over from Vicky Park. Yeah, I'm going to make a formal complaint.
Oh, dear. Bloody hell, south of the river lot. Right, this week, Techno Balls. I'd like to talk about sorting the issue out of whether the ball is grounded when it hits the line or whether it is, you know, to speed up video ref decisions in the game, because we all hate it. We all go to the video ref. Ah, just a point, actually. This Magic weekend so far, be an interesting start. I haven't seen many video refs, so be worthwhile just seeing if there's an improvement there. But anyway, this idea is... the advances in pitch technology. Now, we've already talked about that Anfield has got this impregnated bits of polypropylene. I can't say it now. Polypropylene, yeah.
Just keep saying impregnated.
Yeah, okay. Oh, no, I don't want to do that. Well, if it... Surely now the technology must be that you could actually sort of put sort of some kind of like metallic contact device in or something like that where... In the ball itself, it has some sensors, and when the contact is made, when it hits the in-goal or the line of the in-goal, a try is scored, and therefore you don't need to be reliant just on the video ref. You can basically have just like the lights of the post light up green as the contact is made and a try is scored. So this would eliminate the need to have like the subjective view of some old... referee sat in a cabin somewhere and then making his decisions.
So are you suggesting maybe we electrocute the pitch and you complete the circuit when you score a try by putting your hand on the ball and your hair all stands up on end like a...
a Van de Graaff generator. Mm. Yes, that's a good idea. So whoever gets up with the hair standing on end, I like this, Sam, I'm including it in there. If the hair's standing up end, they've scored a try. So I think for... clubs that have got exclusively pitches for rugby, this is an absolutely ideal solution to solve the video ref decision making when it comes to scoring a try. I'm happy to write to the RFL if this is something that we think our listeners would be interested to sort of progress this idea. So if you think it's a good idea, then get in touch at whatbevin@gmail.com. What else? Letters, phone calls,
Facebook, Dennis.
Yeah, Facebook, Brian Bevin at Facebook, whatever it is. I'm on there. Let us know. It all works. It's a great idea. So, what do you think, Rob?
I missed most of that, to be honest. First of all, I made myself a coffee, and I've just realised we've got technical difficulties, and we were about to lose the whole show. I've just managed to run, get the cable, and plug it in. What it has brought to my attention is I've run about 30 yards across the house, and I'm now out of breath.
Yeah, that's understandable, really. Mm-hmm. You carry
so
a
you wouldn't be diving from any distance, would you? You'd just be collapsing.
Yeah. That's still scored a try.
Anyone wants to know about my great uncle and the wicket keeping? No, we're moving on now. Moving on. Okay, with Sam being the stat man, we all know he's keen on a mathematical equation. Well, it turns out young Callum is only 38.2978% of Sam's age. So to see if Callum can fill the 61.7021% age gap with his weekly section, it's over to Callum and his Challenge Cup predictions.
I thought you said weekly sex show then. Sorry.
As the Challenge Cup enters the last eight, the quarterfinals, we look ahead to the games that will be taking place. First of all, the two championship sides, Bradford Bulls and Halifax. Bradford coming off the back of a fantastic win against Super League's Leeds Rhinos, and Halifax doing what they do best and getting results when and if they can. Bradford and Halifax, two very, very even teams in the championship. I can see a Bradford win. I do predict a Bradford win, but I think Halifax will give the Bulls a run for their money. And at least with it being a tie with both Championship teams, they can definitely give Super League teams a run for their money. Hull FC against Catalan, do the quarter-final. At the KCOM Stadium, I can see Hull FC not walking all over Catalan, but I can see Hull FC getting quite a good result, although Catalan have been picking up some good wins as of late, and they did beat Hull FC 37-0 in the Super League quite recently, but I can see a Hull FC winning that one. Wakefield Trinity against St Helens. St Helens, the Super League lead leaders. Wakefield, a team who do surprise quite a lot of folk. I think it's easy enough to say a Saints win, but with it being at Saints, Wakefield could come as the underdogs, where they will be the underdogs, and I can possibly see something happening there. So I'm going to predict a Wakefield win in that one. And then finally, our boys, Warrington, The Wire. We go to the KCOM Craven Park to take on Hull Kingston Rovers, a side that have fallen down the ladder in recent times, sitting about 10th, not been doing too well, a few injuries on their books, and I think we can take advantage of that. I mean, our performance against Wigan was gutful. I think we did really well to get the win and hold on to it, so I can see us progressing through to the semi-finals, and you'd like to think we can avoid Saints in the semi-final, but if you're going to win the competition, you've got to beat those teams above you, and that team above us is St Helens. But in this one, I do see a Warrington win in the game against Hull KR. So progressing through to the semi-finals, I've got Wakefield, Warrington, Hull FC and Bradford.
Right, well, with Callum leading very nicely into our next section, because on Friday, Warrington head over to Kingston-upon-Hull to play Hull Kingston Rovers in the Challenge Cup. Sam, it's the quarter-final. Will Hull KR be hang, drawn and quartered by Warrington?
I like what you did there. You didn't fall into the trap of hung, drawn and quartered, did you? I noticed that.
It was also quite hard to say Kingston-upon-Hull to play Hull Kingston Rovers. But, you know, the Paxman I now am. You all right there, Dennis?
Yeah. Carry on. What are we talking about?
Hull KR play Salford tomorrow. Hull KR have got a couple of players back. So I think it will depend on how Hull KR come through that and how we pull up after what was obviously a very physical game today. But you look at the league table, you look at what happened when we went there 4 or 5 weeks ago. I think it'll be close, but I've got to see us as favourites. 22-16.
Okay. Oh, he's given his prediction. He's gone early there. He's gone early there.
Yeah. What about you, Dennis? Rob? I'll have to go to you first while I make a note.
Well, there's a very easy... Well, there's going to be an easy semi-final, isn't there? Because Bradford are playing Halifax. So we're going to end up with a first division team in a semi-final. And unless the referee can keep him in it with the Hicks Boson effect or the Thaler effect or the Kendall Mint Cake, there's going to be a walk into the final for a Super League team. I think it will be tough, but I thought today we showed signs of improvement, so I think we'll just edge over the line. I think we'll do them about 16-22.
Mm. Oh, same as me then.
Oh, is that what you said?
Yeah. Oh, it'd be interesting.
We'll go with that. I'll go 23.
No, you can't change it now, Sam. I've just realised, with me leading the predictions, all I need to do is just copy Sam every week to the end of the season.
How are you leading the predictions?
It's a bit like, you know what it's like? It's like the Price is Right. Right, you've got the four daft fuckers on the show, and one goes, I think it's £10. And then the next one goes, 15. And then the next one goes, 20. Now, surely the last person goes 21 to get that entire range. And they go,
they never did.
I think it's 36. I think it's 36.
Yeah. Interesting.
Dennis, does this mean Wire FM for you? It's not on the telly.
Well, yeah, it does, doesn't it? Is it Wire FM for you?
I'm not sure if Hull KR have the rights to this. They have Hull KR TV, and you can actually pay to watch the game on Hull KR TV about 48 hours after it takes place. So I might do the likely, lads, lock myself away. Oh. And
when are we doing the podcast? About three weeks later.
Are you sure it's not on? Are you sure it's not on Sky? I thought it was on Sky. I'm off work next week, so I may, if as long as the weather's okay, I'll go. But I'm sure it's on Sky.
Well, okay. You could look while I do my prediction. I could draw it out while you can just get your wind up internet.
Come on, Dennis. Come on, give us your prediction.
Hulk ER 15, Wire 21. I'm going odd numbers.
Odd numbers.
Very bizarre.
It's good though.
I reckon. Yeah, because it's going to be close.
7:30 next week, Hull KR versus Warrington Wolves, Sky Sports Arena.
Oh, well, there we go. We'll all watch it.
Harold Challenge Cup.
Happy days. Okay, right, that's it. After Tom Lynham joined us, we're pleased to announce we have a few more guests coming on the podcast over the month of June, and one special interview guest certainly no Wire fan will want to miss. So if you have a question, you know the score, whatbevan@gmail.com or Twitter, whatbevan, and our Facebook page, whatever that is. Here's to Wire making the semi. So until then, it's less of a semi and more of a raging hard-on from Sam.
All the best.
And less of a semi, think more Dot Cotton after she's been left out in the rain. It's a flaccid wave from Dennis.
We're seeing ya.
It's certainly been a magical night for Warrington, led by Blake Austin. Was it magic from Austin, or is he the new messiah? New messiah.
Yeah.
My name's Rob London. I'm off to present Newslight. You've been listening to What Would Brian Bevan Say?
What's news like? Said that wrong, you know. Fucking hopeless.
More like news round, John Craven.
Oh dear.
Do you think I'll get University Challenge as well?
No.